Mr. Welsh, good morning to you, and Mr. Wiggum.
Yep.
Good morning to you, and do either council have any questions before we begin? Then Mr. Welsh, you may approach and you may proceed.
It is a good morning. It's going to be better this afternoon because I tee off at 1:10. And I'm here because of the negligence in this case, in that the operator of this motor vehicle. Hey, you on the picnic table. Do you hear me? Listen, I've got to mow this grass on this slope. And you're sitting on the picnic table and the grass is wet. So there is a possibility I might be sliding instead of driving. And I want you to get away from that picnic table in case I slide into it. And as soon as I get done, you can come back and sit on the picnic table. The weather was not an excuse, because the negligence was operating on that wet grass. With a motor vehicle, and the motor vehicle, as far as we're concerned, doesn't have to be a motor vehicle to operate on a street or a bridge or a road. It can operate on the ground.
Counsel, is there any genuine factual dispute about what caused the mower to slide?
No. And there is a safety reminder that Mr. Black needed to comply with on terrain and surroundings. And it says, look ahead for dead tree limbs. Use caution when mowing on near slopes or embankments. And this was a slope. Do not exceed the recommended limits. Slow down your piece of equipment and avoid those areas when the grass is wet or ground or muddy. And this is what the negligence is. There is just no reason for this operator to operate that motor vehicle on that wet grass.
If the claim of negligence is that Mr. Blazek was negligent in mowing on wet grass, how does the claim not arise out of a weather condition?
Because he failed to warn, and the weather condition wasn't, as far as the grass being wet, he knew about that.
But
the negligence was him not warning.
I hear you saying the negligence was he shouldn't have been mowing at all because the grass was wet, correct?
Correct.
Isn't the weather condition then a part of your claim, and doesn't your claim arise out of that?
Yes, it does, only because he should have warned, and he shouldn't have been operating that machine on that wet grass. Now, you get into what about the weather? The weather, or dew, whatever it was, that meant he had to tell this guy, to tell Mr. Brown, to get out of the way.
Did the trial court say something about the weather exception?
Oh, yeah. They said that they went right to the statute and talked about it, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the negligence of being on it in the first place. But most importantly, he needed to get Mr. Brown off of the picnic table. He knew in advance that operating this big machine on wet surface, particularly on a slope, you're not supposed to do. But if I'm going to do it because I want to get it done, then if there's anybody in the way, I need to tell them to get out of the way. Now, they talk about Mr. Brown doing a recreational...
Before you move on from there,
where should we look for the definition of a motor vehicle in a state tort claims claim type case?
Because you got
where do we look for the definition?
How about the Black Dictionary? I'm saying is we have a motor vehicle here. This was a huge motor vehicle with a large engine on the back and so forth.
The state cites to a definition that limits motor vehicles to those that typically run on highways.
There's nothing. And we all know that...
You dispute that dictionary definition that the state cites exists?
I say that a motor vehicle doesn't necessarily have to strictly run on the street or a bridge or a highway.
Which
a motor vehicle can run anywhere.
If there are conflicting definitions, dictionary definitions, conflicting plain language meanings, which one would we go with in the land of the Tort Claims Act where there's some rules of construction?
Because we got a situation here where the state owns the motor vehicle, and this is what they need to do, and this is why they were putting, this was the reason for the rule that they had giving the operators. Don't operate that motor vehicle, that lawnmower, on wet grass. In this situation, he's resting. It's a recreation activity is not there. He was resting, and you can look at it that you got to focus in on the activity. The activity was resting, and rather than looking around or the characteristics or seeing the characteristics of the area around.
Was he picnicking?
No, he was fishing, and he took a break on fishing, and the picnic table was right there on the side of the lake, and
so
he just moved
back. How broadly do we look at the concept of fishing?
I don't think you need to look at the context of the fishing, because at the time that all this happened, he was resting, and he wasn't enjoying the scenery. He was resting because he had been fishing
And he was going to fish again?
You know, he hadn't really decided that, but that's what he liked. But as you know from the record, he didn't have a fishing license, so he did get a ticket and so forth.
Counsel, about the record, are we working off the original complaint, or is there an operative amended complaint that would set out the allegations of negligence that you've been talking about this morning?
Yes, we set out the allegations of negligence.
In the original complaint?
In the amended complaint.
When was the amended?
And we went right down the line as far as, and I have it here, as far as what the negligence was in failure to warn was part of it.
When was the amended complaint filed?
I don't know. I mean, it's in the record, but it was there. And I just, one more thing, the inherent risk. Sitting on a picnic table, and I talked to you about that before, sitting on a picnic table is an inherent risk. And if you make that the law, that means that you and I, if we're sitting with our kids or grandkids, and we hear a lawnmower, we got to get our ass off of it. We got to get the food off of it and get away from it, because that lawnmower can hit us. There was no contributory negligence, and he did not assume the risk. Any more questions?
Thank you very much. Mr. Wiggum, good morning to you.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is Carlton Wiggum, and I, along with my co-counsel, Megan Loida, represent the appellee in this matter, the state of Nebraska. This case ultimately comes down to whether exceptions to the State Tort Claims Act protect the state from liability when weather conditions create additional risks or when the public recreates on state property. I'll cover the two exceptions to the State Tort Claims Act on which the state moved and was granted summary judgment. First, the weather conditions exception, and then the recreational activities exception, with a special emphasis on the inherent risks there. The weather conditions exception has three requirements. First, that it's caused by a temporary condition caused by nature. Second, that it occurs on a state-owned public place. And third, that it does not arise out of the use of a motor vehicle by a state employee.
Is there any dispute here, any genuine dispute about what caused the lawnmower to slide into the picnic table?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. Appellant himself testified during his deposition that but for the wet grass that day, the mower never slides down the hill, never comes in contact with that picnic table.
So does the record tell us how the grass got wet?
Yes, the state entered into evidence, and this was testified to by the mower operator, that the grass was wet either from rain the night before, and we entered some evidence as to the precipitation in the area the night before, or by dew that formed that morning.
Is dew weather?
We would still say it's a temporary condition caused by nature. After all, it's the operation of the moisture in there, the humidity with the heat causing that condensation. So it's still within that temporary condition caused by nature analysis.
It hasn't been established yet which definition of a motor vehicle this court should adopt. Why should we adopt the one forwarded by the state?
Sure. The state, to start out, we of course have to look at the plain meaning of the definition of motor vehicle. And the state has provided several definitions in its brief to that point. In addition to that, we would highlight the Oxford English Dictionary Online definition, which is a road vehicle powered by an engine. So if you look at all of those definitions, they generally look at what the vehicle was used for, and it's primarily used to be used on the road, usually for the transport of goods or people. So here where we have the lawnmower, which is primarily used to mow the grass, not to transport goods or people, it would not be considered a motor vehicle under that definition. In fact, as the evidence shows, it was trailered and moved between the different SRAs in the area by a different vehicle, so it does not really travel on the road.
Are there different definitions of motor vehicles?
Appellant cites to, in support of his contention that it isn't, to the two statutory definitions that are in the Motor Vehicle Operators Licensing Act and a similar act. And in those cases, the legislature started with a very broad definition, right, which was that a motor vehicle is any vehicle with wheels and an engine. But then under that, it had a list of exceptions, and included in that, those list of exceptions were vehicles which would meet that definition but would not commonly be considered motor vehicles, things that did not usually run on the road, things like your ATVs, UTVs, and of course in this case they also all exclude the use of a riding lawnmower. So I think in that case you can see that there's a difference there where the legislature tried to cast a very wide net to capture as many things as it possibly could under that umbrella, but then go in and separately accept out the things that were not considered a motor vehicle.
Was he viewing scenery? Is that what the court held?
So the district court found that he was engaged in four recreational activities: fishing, visiting, viewing, and enjoying a scenic area.
Was there a factual dispute about what the plaintiff was engaged in at the time the mower hit the picnic table?
Well, the district court found that there was no genuine dispute of fact on these, as far as those recreational activities.
So his deposition and his affidavit, he says he wasn't viewing, right?
Well, in his deposition, he does actually say that he was viewing and enjoying the scenic sites there. It's only in this affidavit that subsequently comes out at the time of summary judgment that he all of a sudden starts to dispute that he was viewing or enjoying these scenic areas. I beg
your pardon. So he has said, in your view, two different things.
Yes. And this affidavit directly contradicts his prior deposition testimony as well as his answers to requests for admissions. And so in that regard, we think this court should view this with little weight, as the district court obviously did, because, again, it's directly contradictory
to
his prior.
So the plaintiff has a different view, different statements as to what he was doing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the trial court picked one.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, I think that
picked one or picked four.
Well, picked the four activities that he was engaged in at that same time, but picked that based on the prior testimony of the appellant in this case that there was no genuine issue of fact that he was engaged in those activities at the time.
And the trial court goes on to find that being hit by a lawnmower is an inherent risk of every one of those activities, doesn't it?
That's correct.
And what was the basis for that?
Well, the district court order on that respect is a little unclear, I would say. So the way that we put it to the district court and the way we're advocating this now is that when you're identifying the inherent risk, you have to look at this broadly and contextually around the activity being performed. Appellant suggests that you view the inherent risk of an activity very narrowly. And so if we take, for example, fishing, you know, if you have ice fishing, fishing on a boat and fishing from a shore, they would say you pick out only that common risk that exists amongst all of those different forms of activities and pull that out. And in the case of fishing, that's what, that you hook yourself with your own hook? The bottom line is that that's a very narrow risk that's being protected. And in fact, there's no real liability on the part of the state that would need to be protected by this exception, if that's the case. So instead, looking at it more broadly and focusing really on the individual and what they're doing, we look at the context. And as we look at the context, we see that the inherent risk can change quite a bit depending on it. So if you're...
So you want to come out so broadly, though, that we look at, he's on maintained space, right? And so he, because he's on maintained space, doesn't matter if he's looking at a scenic site, picnicking, fishing, whatever, there's a risk of being hit by maintenance equipment.
Yes.
That's your argument. Doesn't that argument, isn't that at least a little bit in tension with our decision in Brown 1, where we said we can't even analyze whether the immunity applies with this motion to dismiss because you haven't identified what the activity is, and the only argument is there's immunity because it's on maintained space.
Sure.
How do you sort of... Weave that argument.
There would be two things that I'd say to that. The first thing is that in Brown 1, the focus was really on the fact not only were the activities not identified, but that it was applied to all spaces that were state-owned. And so here, where we have now identified the specific activities, visiting, viewing, enjoying a scenic site, fishing, and you look at the specific area that it's on, namely that it's a state recreational area, an area that is part of the state park system, specifically held to preserve outdoor spaces, to provide a place for recreational activities to occur, including at the six lakes in the area, that is a scenic area, which is explicitly spelled out in the statute as being a recreational activity when you're on that area.
Did I misunderstand you? Were you saying that the getting hit by a lawnmower was inherent to all of these things, including ice fishing?
Probably not ice fishing, but again, that's where you take into account that context, because when you're in the middle of the winter, you're obviously not going to have these maintenance guys out there mowing the grass. So again, once you take into that account that context, then it's no longer an inherent risk for that activity in that scenario.
So it's not a principle of law?
No.
Going back to a question the chief asked about dew, whether the dew is weather conditions, I understood your answer to be that, well, it doesn't matter because it's caused by nature.
Well, I think it's a two-piece thing there.
It has to be both, right? The statute uses both caused by nature and due to weather conditions.
Sure. And we would say that weather is not strictly limited to precipitation. Weather is also your temperature, your humidity, things of this nature. And so again, when you look at the fact that this dew is caused by the condensation, the effects of the humidity in the air and this sort of stuff, then it is still an effect of weather, even if it's not precipitation per se.
If the grass was wet, conditions are wet, is there any way that Brown can frame a negligence complaint, or does the state have immunity solely because it's the conditions are wet?
In this case, I think, at least with the alleged negligence, it is primarily, at least with the weather conditions exception, because the ground is wet. There could be other allegations out there that he could have made, which maybe would be not connected to that weather condition, but he hasn't made them in that
case.
Well,
at least I heard it, Mr. Welsh argue that at least part of the claim was that the person mowing the grass, given the slope, should have called out to Mr. Brown and said, hey, I'm about to mow this sloped area. Please move from the picnic table. How about that?
that's all directly tied back to that weather condition, because but for that weather condition, he's not required to do anything additional to, again, call out, as Mr. Welch alleges, although we would probably dispute whether he was required to do that or not. But it all ties directly back to that weather condition and what he had to do based on that condition.
What about just the slope alone? If the standard of care said you shouldn't mow in an area where you're near a slope and near a person, could you frame a negligence allegation that doesn't depend on the weather? And if it happens to be wet, then what?
So under the weather conditions exception, I do think that you could frame an argument like that. The problem in this case is that there has been no testimony that this lawnmower would have gone down the hill regardless of whether it was wetter that day or not. Because all of it is conditioned upon that wet grass, then I think you are absolutely in the weather conditions exception. And at that point, unless it's outside and not tied to that weather condition, then it is all ultimately going to be covered by the exception.
So your argument is the way that a plaintiff could avoid immunity in that situation is to show that the accident would have happened even in the absence of the weather condition.
I think so, and that would be consistent with the couple cases that appellant did cite, Woolen v. State and McDonald v. DeCamp Legal Services, where, especially in Woolen, there were ruts in the road which had existed for several years, and the state had failed to maintain them. They had filled up with water from a rainstorm, and then the person in that case had hydroplaned on the water. And this court found in that case that there were these separate independent acts of negligence from the actual weather conditions, namely that the state had failed to maintain this for many years, that was ultimately the cause of the accident, or that would have caused the accident anyways, regardless of the water conditions. And so I think that is an analysis similar to what you'd have to take here, that he would have to allege some sort of separate independent act of negligence outside of being directly tied to that weather condition that would ultimately give him a negligence claim in these conditions. I see I'm out of time. If there are no further questions, I would urge the court to affirm the district court's order. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute, 22 seconds.
1 minute and 22 seconds, Mr. Welch.
You got a simple job. All you have to do is make the lawnmower a motor vehicle. And it takes care of everything. In other words, what you got is a situation here that if the lawnmower is a motor vehicle, the motor vehicle can't go around hitting fishermen and people watching the scenery and everything else. I really think, though, the real negligence is the failure to warn. The failure to warn.
Is the term motor vehicle in this context ambiguous?
I don't think so. It may have been when my dad was mowing the lawn, back 70 years ago or 80 years ago, but no. A motor vehicle. This is a big-time motor vehicle. It's got more horsepower than some of the cars on the street. And it shouldn't make any difference that it has to be on a street or a bridge or a road.
Are you alleging that this accident would have occurred even absent the wet grass?
I would have said, and I would have taken on the case, he was on a slope. And so forth, and he had to cut the grass on the slope. He still needed to get Mr. Brown off that picnic table because it was a slope. And I think that you could have even had sliding, even though if the grass wasn't wet. It just was wrong.
Does the deposition testimony of your client uphold that theory?
Yeah, the deposition testimony, he says he heard it, but not very long. And he certainly didn't hear anyone telling him to get off the picnic table. And he was resting. He wasn't concerned about the motor vehicle, the lawnmower, hitting the picnic table. As we talked before,
I think there's been a representation that your client's deposition admitted that but for the wet grass, the mower wouldn't have slid.
Well,
is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think he knew afterwards that everything was wet and so forth and so on. But going through all of this, it's just failure to warn him. Get him out of the way, no matter what. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is Hartchell Road versus Hartchell Road. Justice Miller-Lerman is recused from this matter.